Hey, everybody. We are back once again for yet another commissioned podcast. Another one by Josh Wilson from Saxbaha, North Carolina. He selected the one of the greatest science fiction horror movies of all time, James Cameron's Aliens.
Yeah.
Aliens, which I believe came out in 86.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And we are here to review it and talk about it on his behalf and behest. I'll get right into his comments. I was only 6 when this came out and originally only saw the edited for TV version.
You
and me both. I've asked the guys to take on a special edition version of Aliens as I believe it is the superior to the theatrical release. My mom got me into watching the Alien franchise.
Did you get the special edition?
I did.
Okay.
And it's the first time I've seen the special edition.
I was going to say, did yours have the scene at the end where she gets in the exosuit and fights a xenomorph?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I don't know what the difference is.
Okay. Okay.
You weren't following my joke, but okay. Never mind.
At first I'm like, wait a second. Every version of the movie has that.
Indeed.
Maybe there's a version where like you just blast off and she gets into cryo sleep. There's no fight at the end.
Yeah.
That would be a significantly inferior version. My mom got me into watching the Alien franchise, and I own the anthology. I love the first one as well, but the acting and action in Aliens takes it over the top for me. Sigourney Weaver is really in her prime as an actress, and the movie supplies so many iconic characters such as Hicks, Hudson, and Vasquez. Would like to know how you guys think Alien stacks up to Alien. No need debating with the last two of Prometheus unless you want to, but those are subpar in my book, even though I'm a fan.
Resurrection? Come on. No love for... What is it? Winona Ryder's in that, yeah?
Yeah. That's the one where Sigourney Weaver is an super alien. Soldier alien, yeah. And Winona Ryder's Winona Ryder.
And the mixed up DNA. Oh, yeah.
Yep. And alien babies getting their buttholes sucked out of airlocks.
Sad thing is, I remember that movie way better than I remember the original Alien.
Mm.
So I honestly couldn't tell you how this stacks up against the original Alien.
Okay. Where do you think the Alien franchise went off the rails with Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection? Do you think the Alien suffered from not having H.R. Giger more involved as he was in Alien? I am a big Giger fan, he said, or it might be Giger. I thought it was Giger, though. I know Aaron is a fan of fleshed-out universes where you can really dive into backstory. Do you feel Aliens is satisfying in that way, or does it not really take the mythology forward enough?
So many
questions. Lastly, how do you think Alien stacks up with the other great James Cameron movies such as Terminator, T2, Abyss, etc.?
Oh, boy.
We might have to go through that again.
Maybe take them one at a time.
he also had an addendum. He wanted us to give a tribute to Bill Paxton, who passed away tragically and too soon. Earlier this year.
Game over, man. It's game over.
And wants to know what we think of Alien Covenants, perhaps resurrecting the Alien, the good, quote-unquote good Alien movies.
I don't know. I mean, I hoped that Prometheus would do that, but I don't know that it did.
I don't think Prometheus is a bad movie.
No, it's not bad. I just don't, it didn't feel the same as these kind of, these movies.
Okay, we can talk. I mean, so what do you want to talk about first? Do you want to give her genuine...
Sure, yeah.
I mean, spoilers for Aliens. If you haven't seen Aliens now, you probably never will.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of those going to be kind of nostalgia ramble fest type of podcast, I imagine.
Probably.
Because I don't know. I think this... I've already said that Predator is the greatest action movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But this certainly has its... can throw its hat in the ring.
Yeah.
Instead of one very impressive alien, you have literally hundreds of lesser impressive, but still scary.
Yeah. Oh, very scary.
You also throw in a... the thing that works for this movie is it also... It has not an unconventional superhero, like, you know, a fairly nondescript, average every woman.
Uh-huh. And a fairly nondescript average every Marine in Hicks. Like, they're all pretty nondescript with the exception of maybe like Vasquez.
But like,
and,
you know, a soldier you've had training to
Hudson.
Fight. Ripley's just just a, I think, a cargo specialist, wasn't she? She was like second.
Yeah,
or
some
third.
Kind of pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, she bonds with this child character, which is the rare non-annoying child in a horror movie,
mm-hmm.
action movie. So it's got a lot going for it. So do we want to talk up front about our thoughts about the special edition?
So I don't, I legitimately don't know the difference between the two.
I think you might have gotten a bum copy because I did a little research when you texted me about it and I looked into it and I guess.
Well, I went on Amazon and I downloaded the special edition.
Because their director's cut and the special edition, I guess, share the same name, but the director's edition has about 30 minutes of additional material in it. And I'm so you're going to have to trust me on this since you didn't see it.
Yeah.
And I'm of mixed opinion because so up front, when I think of the original movie, one of the biggest flaws of it, I think, is that there is really no recognition of how fucked up it is to wake up 57 years into the future and realize that everyone you know is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they insert a scene where she finds out that they've looked up her daughter who, like, passed away, you know, in the not-too-distant past and has no family of her own. And, you know, there's an emotional moment where Ripley, like, grieves for her daughter because she said she promised her she would be back from her original mission before her 11th birthday, which really adds another dimension to her bonding with Newt. Like this, you kind of get, I think I'm surprised how well the movie works with that backstory just kind of stripped out.
Yeah, it doesn't quite have the punch that version does.
The other thing it adds is that she's kind of officially court-martialed by the corporation, and they strip her of her pilot's license and like all of her like employment prospects, which...
Yeah.
You know, there's this kind of almost nonsensical scene where Paul Reiser's character kind of dangles like, hey, I can recommission you and all this other stuff in front of her as a way to start over, which doesn't make any sense when you take out the scene where she's officially reprimanded for misuse of company,
Yeah, but they do leave that scene in there, even in the shorter version, just so you know that she's been kind of working at the docks or whatever and knows how to operate this exosuit.
Right.
So that later on it's not like, where did that skill come from?
Well, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like I never thought, like, I mean, I guess if you're working around starships and mining operations, like it wouldn't surprise me if like it'd be like if I met a woman who worked at a dock or, you know, worked at some kind of shipyard now and she's like, hey, I can drive a forklift.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be like, fucking prove it, lady.
Yeah, but you wouldn't say, oh, I work at FedEx loading planes, so I can fly this thing.
Like, okay, yeah.
So it helps, I guess. It's not necessary, okay. I don't think, to throw that in, but it definitely helps.
And there's a lot. There's a couple more Hudson scenes. Is that the Bill Paxton character?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a couple more of his scenes, which, you know, I guess now is a good time as any to do a little tribute to Bill Paxton. Like, he is a vital part of this movie. He's the comic relief. He's the only comic relief.
Yes, I would say so.
And I watched this a lot as a teenager because one of my friends, the same guy that got me into Metallica in my art class, got me into Aliens because he used to love drawing aliens and alien scenes. And like I kind of like he would always quote like, you know, shit that Hudson said. And the man's name in Latin means tons of peace.
Hudson does?
Paxton.
Oh.
Yeah. Literally tons of peace.
Okay.
So what more tribute do you want? He was in a lot of movies that I really like.
He won the heart of Helen Hunt in Twister.
He did.
Stole her right away from Paul Reiser, you know?
Yep.
He really just tortured that poor soul in Real Science.
Yeah.
Or Weird Science.
Yeah, the last movie I can think of him being in is Edge of Tomorrow.
Right.
He was like the ball busting sergeant, which I thought he did really, really well.
He did, yeah.
Like you can't get far enough militarily away from Private Hudson than whatever, you know, sergeant major he was in that thing. He was like, you know, tough and in command.
Yeah, for some reason I remember him sort of as a staple of films when I was growing up.
Right.
But I don't really know why, because I wasn't allowed to watch Aliens. Mm-hmm. I'm certain I didn't see that until much later.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the TV cut of it.
Might have been Twister.
Just Twister, though? Like,
man,
that
dude,
cemented him in my mind as...
I can't tell you how... I mean, this might be a regional thing, but, like, Twister was huge in Indy, because, you know, we have fucking tornadoes all the time.
I think you're right, but it shocks me that movie did it.
Right. Like did Jaws go over big in Kansas? Like I feel right. I wonder right. like if you grow up and like you have no concept of like large oceans and giant fish predators, does it make it more or less scary? And like if you're from like you know California where they have earthquakes but no tornadoes, are tornadoes more or less scary? Because like I must have seen Twister like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
I went to see it at a drive-in theater, which was really crazy.
You thought a Twister was going to come through
because there's
screen.
Like a scene where it's tearing up a drive. It's actually right. destroying a drive-in theater. I think it's playing Wizard of Oz.
Yep.
And it gets sucked up, and it's like I saw it first in an IMAX theater, mm-hmm. and then I went. I'm like, oh god, I got to go see it at the Starlight Drive-In, and yeah, it was cool. This has nothing to do with Bill. Tons of peace, Paxton.
No, but he was definitely a staple of a film when I was growing up.
Should we go through his resume? Because like I'm with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, why not?
He seems like he should be more. We should be able to just flash out
like his, 10 or 12 of them.
Yeah,
but
just
keep,
like
3.
Nick Cage, yeah. Right? He was in Titanic.
Bill. Oh,
Apollo 13. There you go.
Okay. All right. Now it's starting to make sense. I watched Apollo 13 about 100 times.
Yes. Indeed. But I'm trying to go through some other ones that we might have seen.
How did I forget him? I mean, the focus was all on Hanks.
Oh, Big Love.
Never saw that.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. No. Well, there's a huge one that he was in. Man.
At some point, he changed. Like, you can see his weird science role a little bit in this movie.
Uh-huh.
Where he's kind of this
True Lies. Oh
True
my
Lies?
God, he was the fake spy that tried to seduce Arnold Schwarzenegger's wife in True Lies.
Okay, yep.
And he Arnold made him piss himself. Oh, he's in Tombstone. He was one of the Earp boys in Tombstone.
There you
the
go.
One that died.
It's all making sense now.
Okay, now it's coming back.
Like 5 or 6 things.
Now it's coming back. He was in Predator 2, of course. Yeah. Okay.
But you can see a little bit of like his weird science character in this role in Aliens. Like he's got a similar demeanor. He's not quite the asshole.
He had a bit,
or whatever his name is.
He had a bit part in Commando.
No.
Right after the same year he was in Weird Science. He was an intercept officer in Commando.
I don't remember him from that.
He was a punk leader in Terminator.
Yeah,
the
he
original
seems
Terminator.
Like a punk leader.
Okay. So yeah. I think he's also in Stripes. I didn't know that either. The Bill Murray military comedy.
Yeah, at some point he went from Joker to like serious actor.
Quote,
you know?
Unquote. Yeah.
Yeah, like Twister. I wouldn't say there's any bit of his weird science role in that.
No.
He's like leading man type role, but
quote unquote.
But yeah, I mean, in this he's a Joker in Weird Science. He's a Joker. Like he's an asshole in Weird Science.
We've appropriately attributed the tons of peace, Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
And what else do we want to talk about?
I was surprised to see, I think I knew this somewhere in the back of my mind and I'd heard this over the years, but Gail Ann Hurd is actually a producer on this. She's, if you don't know, she's one of the executive producers on The Walking Dead now.
Well, she was also an executive producer of Terminator 2. She must be in tight with the Cameron.
Seems like it. I wonder if they got her on Walking Dead hoping they could get Cameron to do something.
Nope, he's busy making 10 Avatar movies.
Yeah.
And exploring the depths of the Mariana Trench. I guess this feels like a Cameron movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's heavy on the special effects, heavy on the science fiction, heavy on the action and gore. It's funny because when I read Roger Ebert's review, he was genuinely shaken by this movie, which surprised me because he's not like he's seen The Exorcist and he's seen like scary movies. I don't think this is a particularly scary film. In fact, the only part where it really gave me the heebie-jeebies is anytime a chest burster is involved because I don't like body horror. And I found the thing where like Newt and Ripley was locked in the medical bay with two on the loose face huggers.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was genuinely tense because one of my weaknesses is child endangerment. And it just feels, you know, like it's, and those face huggers are creepy.
Mm-hmm.
They're like spiders that rape your mouth and put something inside you to burst out in a couple of days. Like it's the worst form of spider you can think of.
It's no good. I actually think one of the other really tense moments is when she goes back in to try and find Newt, and she ends up in the lair of the queen there.
Right.
They use that little
standoff.
Yeah.
Like the alien queen's like, back down. I don't want any of my children to die.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, if you lay that many eggs, mm-hmm. are you really all that concerned that a couple of them are going to get splattered or lit on fire?
I have a better question. Why did Ripley, in a fit of pique, torch the eggs? She knows this whole thing is going to go up in a nuclear fireball within a matter
Why
of moments.
Waste the ammo?
Why antagonize? Like, would the queen have tore her egg sac off and come chasing after Ripley if she'd have just kind of been like, all right, we're going to let all this go?
Well, I guess the question is, how smart do you think these aliens are? Clearly, they're smart, right? They're smart enough to realize how to operate elevators. They're smart enough to form tactics to try and get inside this bunker that they're in. Yet they're not smart enough to realize what's actually happening here, and that in 14 minutes or whatever, they're going to go up in a puff of smoke.
Right.
So how smart are these things exactly?
That's a good question. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I would be fine with just giving them, like, insect-level intelligence. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe the workers or the drones are kind of like that, but the queen has got a little bit more cunning to her.
Yeah. Could be.
Because, it's like I said, the queen seemed remarkably intelligent in the final scene.
Yeah.
Like, really grasping the fact that you had the gun and she was threatening her eggs and, you know, like, you have a tactical retreat.
And you can imagine, like, perhaps they're even in some ways more intelligent than human beings, but
well, if we're talking about, you know, Private Hudson, maybe.
Right. Definitely him. But you can imagine, like, them being familiar with basic concepts, like the concept of an elevator, right? Mm. They probably have something like that in their ships or whatever, something that moves you around from place to place and has buttons. Like, you can probably understand that. Whereas you might not understand the complexities of a fusion reactor, right?
Right, right.
Like, even if you have fusion reactors, you might not recognize that this is a fusion reactor.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. The intelligence felt pretty good to me. Mm. I thought these things were sufficiently intelligent to make them a real plausible threat to Ripley and the crew.
Yeah.
But not so intelligent that they couldn't be beaten.
Yeah, and that's the other thing.
Plausibly, anyway.
Because going into special editions, there were... going back to special edition, they added a bunch of other scenes, too. There was an extended scene of Newt and her brother and their mom and dad, like, discovering the original alien ship and radioing back to Earth to ask if they can salvage it, and Paul Reiser giving, like, the, you know... he's not even really paying attention. He's, like, the douchebag... I mean, on whatever the future equivalent of golfing is, and he's just, like, very distracted. He's like, yeah, who cares? Who cares? Mm-hmm. And he gives him permission to do this. And there's another scene, and it kind of explains there's some talk where her brother and her are discussing, like, oh, you're just small and you fit in all the tunnels, and they're trying to, like, provide the backstory for how she's able to survive in the base, which I'm like, none of this is necessary, and some of it is awkward and dumb. Like, I think it's actually more mysterious. Just like, how did this little girl survive? Like, you don't really know. It's just plausible enough, but it kind of adds to her mystique. And that scene took away from her mystique. And there's a lot of other inserts. Like, the Marines find these smart turrets, like these automated turrets.
Yeah.
And they put them in defensive positions. And, like, you can see, like, they start off with, like, 500 rounds of ammo. And, like, Hudson's like, oh, my God, they're kicking ass. Look at them. And they're just mowing down aliens. But the aliens just keep coming. And then the turrets start slowly running out of ammo. Adds a little bit of tension.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it kind of also ruins the pacing of the second half of the movie. If I would like to make the Aaron edition would have all of the backstory of Ripley with her losing her daughter and, you know, getting you know, court-martialed or whatever the corporate equivalent of court-martialed. And it would get rid of all the other crap, because I feel like adding 30 minutes to this movie doesn't do it any favors. It's not the kind of movie that needs 30 minutes more of breathing room. But I did appreciate the extra backstory with Ripley.
So I suppose I agree with that. I think it was maybe a little overly long. Some of the things that I think it does well is kind of it explains to you without having someone say, wow, there are 500 of these things in here and we stand no chance. It explains to you kind of that through the visuals. Like when those guns are running out of ammo and you see it, them just mowing down alien after alien, mm-hmm. and you realize that that's only the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
Now you realize they're well and truly fucked. Like,
right.
So I think that does, that worked for me, just as far as the guns go, but maybe you didn't need to see it twice. Mm. Like, cause you kind of see it, you know, they try one angle, mm-hmm. And they're, I guess they're trying to demonstrate how smart these things are.
I think that's the thing, cause with the turrets, it's almost like instead of attacking in mass and getting mowed down, they're just like, you know, nickel and diming the turrets.
Yeah. Like, and they're poking and prodding the entrances,
exactly.
see
exactly.
where the weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. You know, like any intelligent thing would. To go back to your point about how does this feel like a James Cameron movie, I think this feels like a prototypical James Cameron movie. Like, he's kind of developing the style that becomes James Cameron, and I think there's a little bit of heart missing in this one that I think comes
really?
Up later with the James Cameron stuff. Yeah, like, they do the Ripley and Newt stuff, but they only barely scratch the surface with that. Like, it's almost so casually thrown out there.
Maybe there's more scenes in the director's cut I'm giving, because I actually thought they told. And the other thing is, you know, with the fill in of her losing the daughter, I thought that like all the stuff with her and Newt just really landed well for me.
Yeah, but there are like, there's not enough.
I'll tell you where. I'll tell you where Cameron fucked up.
Yeah.
This weird ass non-romance between Hicks and Ripley is total bullshit and has no business being in this movie.
Yeah, it didn't.
Like, if they made this movie in 2017, they would just have a platonic mutual admiration society, and there wouldn't be this ham-fisted flirting over learning to use an auto rifle under a threat of alien attack, and there wouldn't uh-huh. be, you know, it's like there was a lot of that. Just like, I don't buy that. Like, I bought, you know, Michael Bain with Sarah Connor, mm-hmm. but neither of these characters seem like they would be in a position to where they'd just be like, oh yeah, let's make googly eyes at each other. Let's force this concept of a romantic couple and a family in this action horror flick.
I guess I wasn't picking up on that.
You didn't?
No.
You didn't
really.
Get the flirty tones of the
I didn't know if it was flirty or if it was just like respect.
Huh.
Like, this guy is like, yeah, you definitely can handle yourself. Like,
okay.
Not in a, oh, you can handle me kind of way, but
okay.
Like,
I don't know. And this when he gave her the identity bracelet, and there's also mm-hmm. a couple scenes like where there's another scene that I believe this is director's cut, where when she's going back to get Newt, they get on the first name basis.
Oh yeah,
like he goes,
yeah, and she turns around, Ellen.
Yeah. Okay, so you got like, you must have got like half of the expanded scenes. The special edition must have like half of the scenes and not some of the others.
I don't know what it is.
So the turrets were in yours?
The turrets were
okay,
in mine.
Because that's not in the original.
All,
for sure.
All of the dressing down by the corporation was in mine, the corp marshaling.
But you didn't have the scenes of her bemoaning her the loss of her daughter?
No, got all those.
Oh, yep. Okay. Well, then, yeah, you got it.
It was
all.
Whatever the Amazon special,
okay.
It's labeled special edition, whatever
okay.
that is. I
all
got
right,
it.
So yeah, I think you must have got it all then.
Okay. Yeah, that was all in my version.
I kind of want to take the.
I wish they had done more establishment, though, of like. Maybe show a little bit more connection between, like you said, the idea that Ellen here has lost 57 years and that it's cost her an entire lifetime with her daughter.
And that's what I, like yeah.
Maybe
like,
sell that a little bit more to me, and then the Newt stuff would have connected. Like,
right.
I needed more of that, and I also maybe needed a little bit more establishment of these Marines. Like, I you get, like, the bare surface of them, and I guess over the next hour or so you get the rest of them, but make me feel like I'm going in there with a group of buddies, you know?
It's interesting because I'll have to disagree with you again, because I thought, much like Kong, one of the things it did admirably is establish very distinctive characters for almost all of the Marines.
It did, but I don't know that it did it early enough for me.
Huh.
By the time you start getting into the action, I wanted to feel the establishment, and it took a while after that for me.
Yeah, I love that, because like, I think that everyone is kind of unique, though. Everyone had kind of like, even the female pilot with the giant sunglasses, like they pay like just with her character design and mm-hmm. you know, a brief lines of dialogue, I feel like they established enough of a basis of that character that I knew what kind of she was all about, and the sergeant, and they also lean heavily on archetypes, like the sergeant is just all gung-ho about the, you know, every meal, a banquet, every formation, a parade.
My question,
the Lieutenant Gorman, like the whole, like, the lieutenant, you know, the whoever's in charge is a greenhorn, dumb fuck with both thumbs up his ass. And
never been in battle.
It must be a stereotype for a reason, because I imagine the really bad commands, you know, commanders you have stick out in your mind as a military vet. Like the ones that are the ones that are just baseline competent. That's what you expect.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, if my lieutenant squared away, then that's what I expect. That you only remember the really, really good ones and the ones that are just bad.
Yeah, I mean, these people have your life in their hands, you know?
Right.
You would definitely remember the ones who were incompetent.
Right, and they definitely seem to make him be wishy-washy and incompetent.
Yeah.
And they do give him a little bit of a redemption at the end with him and Vasquez.
Yeah, a bit.
I felt bad that the last thing he heard from another human being was you're always an asshole. And then I guess
they
held hands. Yeah,
I wish Paul Reiser had heard that as the last thing.
Let me ask you this: is Paul Reiser a douchebag in this movie because he was born a douchebag, or has the inexplicable fashion of everyone wearing pop collars?
Oh my god,
made people douchebags.
How else would you know it's the future if they didn't do that though?
But you know what I mean? Like,
I do.
The act of popping a collar can make you a douchebag. If the whole culture is trending towards pop collars, then can we blame Paul Reiser? He was just fitting in the shape the environmental pressures was pushing him into.
Do we see anybody else with that same kind of popped collar?
Everyone's popping their collar.
Everyone?
The female executive's popping the collar. The male they all have the collar popped.
Well, they're all douchebags.
There you go.
Like, how do you
gauge?
Like, I want to see the contrast, right? You got to see the person who's in the popped collar but not a douchebag to know.
Mm.
Or someone who's not a douchebag and not in a popped collar. Then you would know whether it's the collar that causes it or not.
Yeah.
Right now, we just have correlation, not causation.
Would you, if you were presented an opportunity like Ripley, that you got back to Earth after 57 years and you'd just gone through this harrowing experience, like this happened yesterday for you, and you just realize that everyone that you had known, except for this fucking cat, is dead. Would you go back to this planet mission? Because I'm trying to think. That's the one thing I thought was a little thin. That, like, they really, like, Ripley is either one of the most strong and resilient people in the world, which I would buy, or she really should have just fallen apart for a little while or been like, I'm never going back. Hell no. I'll tell you everything I know.
Right.
You can send however many Marines you want, but I'm never, ever, ever voluntarily, willingly going back there.
And she did that for a while, right? And then she realized that they had a bunch of colonists on the place and that she had not finished the job, most likely, because she only killed one.
Mm-hmm. But how is she going to help? Like, her only expertise was working a loader. And she had seen one of the aliens before.
Yeah.
Ignored. I thought that was also like, what the hell? Like, everyone's like, you're the only one that's left alive to seen this. Okay, lady, whatever.
So she clearly goes back because she wants to make sure that every single one of them is dead, right?
Uh-huh.
That's her goal. And I feel like she took one look at his popped collar and said, Paul Reiser's a douchebag.
Uh-huh.
He's not going to kill these things in the way that I want them killed. I'm going with him.
Now, that's a good point, that she was suspicious of the corporation and maybe she thought that she had to keep an eye on them to make sure that they're not going to do anything.
I think so.
Kooky.
Because they've already sent these colonists out there, right?
Right.
And they haven't been keeping tabs on them, clearly.
Right.
So she doesn't trust them to do what needs to be done here.
The timing was a little precious for me in this movie. That, like, they've been the colonists have been there for 20 years, but they just discovered aliens recent enough that the last of this non-Newt survivors was chest bursting as the Marines got to him.
Yeah,
like really, that is some, like, you can traverse star systems and be floating for 57 years and then go back in cryo sleep, which takes. Who the hell knows how long, and you get there just in time for the good stuff to happen.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Convenient.
Pretty amazing. What would happen if, like, they had not gone back for 20 more years? Would the aliens eventually, like, I'm sure their eggs would still be there, but, like, would they die? I mean, they need energy.
Yeah, that's a good question.
They have to have something for sustenance to keep the acid pumping through their veins or whatever the hell they have.
You know, the thing that strikes me about these aliens is the rate of multiplication.
Sure.
Like, you go from one facehugger who grabs a colonist to hundreds and hundreds of aliens in the span of time it takes. And we don't know how long it is, right, but the span of time it takes to get from Earth to this planet.
Right.
How long do you think that is? They have to go into cryostasis to
I know.
Could it be 57 years?
It could, something along those lines. Because Ripley promised on her original mission to go, which was at LV-426, to be back in time for her daughter's 11th birthday. So I'm almost wondering if the cryosleep is more like to preserve, like, so you don't waste resources, and also maybe because you're just accelerating incredibly violently and then decelerating incredibly violently.
Yeah, it could be.
Because it must not. I mean, 57 years would seem like that's an insanely long time to be in cryosleep. Like, no one is like, she's got the world, the universal record now.
Yeah, but that's the other scary thing about the aliens is how fast they reproduce.
And grow. Like, you go from chest burster to full-size alien in 24 hours.
Seems like it.
Just feeding on a few crew members. Like, that's incredibly efficient energy to mass conversion.
Can you explain to me? Okay.
No, probably not. None of the shit of the aliens makes real sense.
So here's the biological timeline of the aliens. The queen lays the eggs, right?
Right.
The eggs hatch. Out come facehuggers. Facehuggers grab a human host to completely gestate in and then burst out through their chest as full aliens.
As well, they're like nymphs.
Or things that grow into full aliens eventually. Yeah. Okay.
And they molt a few times. And then,
how do these things multiply without humans?
I don't think they can, which is kind of a problem.
Then how did so many of them...
So they sent 70 couples.
Right, so 140. 70
families.
Of them.
Yeah. 70 families. So there's 140 moms and dads. Yeah. Newt had a brother and obviously herself. So there you got that. So I'm like, so maybe you could have up to 400 people there. Like, if every the colonists brought a couple kids, and I believe it's also canon that aliens can impregnate like cats and dogs.
Oh, right.
Because they take on slightly canine and feline features.
Uh-huh.
So like if there's any pets or like domestic animals, that could have been fodder for host as well.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's not limited to just gestating in humans. They can gestate in
anything that's alive.
Seemingly, yeah, any other life form.
Right.
So there must be, you know, out there somewhere, other planets that they've come to and eaten the people there.
Right.
If you can call them people.
But I think that they did a really efficient job with the Colonial Marines establishing them. Like, right away, like, as soon as a sergeant wakes up, he instantly puts a cigar in his mouth and starts chomping it. And then,
okay, how many lines did he have to ADR? Like, if your defining character trait is a cigar in your mouth, you're ADRing everything.
Right, because you're just mumbling everything.
Yeah.
And, like, Vasquez is, like, doing push-ups, and she's clearly this fucking, you know,
half-stick
dynamite
scar.
Badass. And, and, like, Hudson's like, hey, Vasquez, you ever been mistaken for a man? And she's like, no, have you? That's great.
That's a good
Although,
yeah.
I got to say, in a military organization that's been fully integrated, you know, men and women are serving shoulder-to-shoulder combat roles, surprisingly still sexist.
Yeah.
Like we're a couple hundred years in the future, and women are doing all these things, and you're just going to, like... Like, oh, a lady wants to run a loader? Well, get a load of this, guys. Like, and you know, Hicks and Hudson are, like, leering at her as she's loading her shit, you know, shit. And they're like, oh, look at this. I'm like, what the fuck? That would be weird today.
Yeah.
Like, let alone, like, if you keep, like, that's the one thing that all these future shows get wrong. They don't ever take, like, the social trends and project them into the future.
Right.
Like, it should be, like, if you've got a badass like Vasquez on your squad, you're not going to be busting her balls, well, her non-existent balls.
Beach ball-sized lady nuts.
Based on her, like, lack of external genitalia. Like, you know, you've seen her rip people's faces off. Like, that shit's gone, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of surprisingly, you know, it's the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
The 80s were fucked for a lot of reasons, but...
Right.
The 80s were sexist and racist, and there's a lot of that stuff in here.
You know the other ist? Ripley is a raging robust.
Oh, congratulations. Good job, Ripley.
You need to
job.
Start a robust club, and like she can be the president.
I do. I'm going to send her a plaque. Send Sigourney Weaver a plaque. Thank you for your robust support.
Right. Biological pride. You know, Lance Henriksen is a weird looking, like...
Oh, very weird looking.
It's been probably 10 years since I've seen this movie, and I just remarked about, like, I can tell that's Lance Henriksen, but it's kind of like Patrick Stewart. Mm-hmm. You see Patrick Stewart in Dune, and he looks like an old dude.
Right.
And now he's a really old dude, and he still looks like the guy got to 35 and looked like he was 65, and he stayed that way. Or like forever, like yeah. he just stopped aging. You can tell he's older, mm-hmm. but he's still. And Lance Henriksen's the same way. Like he just popped out of the womb looking like he was 43 years old, and now he's like 70 something. He still looks like he's 43 year old Lance Henriksen with the, you know, he's got the weird hair and the weird face and the kind of bug like a little bit of Buscemi. A little Buscemi in his eyes.
Okay.
They're
yeah.
protruding slightly.
A little bit.
I mean, he plays a really good android is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what has he been in recently? Like
the last thing I seen him in was Millennium.
Right.
That was like 20 years ago. Right. I'm sure he's been in like a bunch of sci-fi productions and a bunch of directed. You know, I don't want to, you know, he's kind of in that the Christopher Lambertson. Is that his guy, you know, the guy from Highlander?
Oh.
Like every once in a while he'll be in a Mortal Kombat or he'll be in a vampire underlord weird thing. But, you know, he's kind of got his sci-fi lane. And
I used to get him and Thomas Jane confused.
For good reason.
They look pretty similar.
They have a very similar face.
Yeah.
What's up with the table centerpieces the Marines have? They all have those weird like physics puzzle magnet thing, like atoms orbiting. Did you notice that every single one of the Marines tables had a centerpiece? It was just like the perpetual motion machine going.
I didn't see that.
James Cameron just send someone with a credit card out to Sharper Image and like get a bunch of stuff that looks like future.
Yeah.
And bring it back.
Probably.
Bring me all the future things.
See, you wouldn't have had that if you had H.R. Giger involved in this. He would have thrown that shit out the window.
Yeah, but H.R.
And then designed something from scratch.
All due respect to H.R. Giger, his whole art style is, what if a man is really afraid of vaginas and then did massive amounts of LSD? Like, if you notice, a face hugger is essentially a woman's vagina with bony hands around it.
I didn't notice that.
And the alien's hands are essentially giant ribbed penises. And yeah, like all of his art
aesthetic was like biomechanical sort of.
Yeah, biomechanical vaginas that are killing you and all enslaving you and doing witchcraft and things.
Sure. In as much as vaginas and penises are organic shapes, I guess you're right.
So yeah, if he was doing it, the centerpieces would all look like that contraption that George Clooney made in Burn After Reading. It'd just be like, you know, weird thorn phalluses pumping in and out of the tables.
What is Burn After Reading?
You haven't seen Burn After Reading?
I've never seen it. Now it sounds insane to me.
Oh, you should see it. It's a Coen Brothers film.
Oh.
Not one of their better ones, but it's still a Coen Brothers film.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So I want to talk about the technology because I feel like they really nailed, like, this feels like a futuristic corporate space marine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their dropship is badass. I love their smart guns, even though those things seem to be wildly impractical for, like, doing close quarters in combat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool, and they're like kind of this weird like Steadicam rig that they're hunched over and steering down the hallways. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Like the tracker technology is super cool. The fact that like all of them have cameras, like that's all very prescient. The only thing they fucked up is all the screens are standard definition.
Well, yeah,
and it would have been so easy to just mat in an actual like, you know, but they have to pass it through the TV filter because. Oddly enough, in 1985 technology, that looked more futuristic than if they just matted in, like, you know, cinema quality graphics, right?
I think so, yeah.
Because it'd been like, oh, that looks weird. That looks like, you know, Star Trek view screen. It doesn't look real. But that's what they would have if they made the movie nowadays.
I got to say, so, yeah, I mean, the tech is really cool. It feels very much like a lot of his other, like James Cameron's other stuff.
Right.
You get these big chunky machines. Like if you look at the Terminator stuff, those, that's very reminiscent of this,
right?
As far as like the feel of it,
like even the pulse rifles looked a lot the same from like when you see the future war scenes from Terminator, and you, and also
their lander, whatever that ship was, that looks a lot like the drones that you see in Terminator. The only thing I didn't like is the APC or the personnel carrier.
Yeah, there was something. I'd love the retractable like cannon on top, just in case you needed to go through something that needed 3-4 feet more of clearance.
Yeah,
but yeah, there was something a little fakey about it. I mean, you could totally tell that like when it was embarking from the drop ship, that it was just a remote controlled vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, and it.
Like they slow.
It almost looks like it's made out of cardboard at times.
It really does.
It just doesn't have the same feel. It doesn't convey the same weight and mass that everything else in the world does.
No, and it was odd. Like, I'm glad you said it because I had the exact same impression. Like this is the fakiest thing.
Yeah.
In the whole movie, everything else like kind of mostly holds up pretty well.
Yeah, it's passable.
But that APC does look really, really bizarre and really like it doesn't belong. Maybe that was the last thing that they ran out of budget. It's like, hey, you know what? It'd be really cool if we welded armor plates on it and made it. No, it's just, look, it's a piece of cardboard that we've bolted onto a remote control dune buggy chassis. Right. This is all we have time for, James. All right, fine.
Yep.
If it was James Cameron of Titanic, he'd been like, you know what? Fuck it. This movie's going to take twice as long and have twice as much budget. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Tell me I can't have another $100 million and waste $100 million you've already spent? Like, he's got, this man is insane now. Like, no one's ever going to be he's going to, like, make a movie that costs $500 million and takes 10 years.
Why not?
And like, are you going to bet against him? Because every single time that's happened, he's made the highest grossing movie of all time.
Yeah.
So.
Just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Like, I don't know when he's going to have, like, an Ishtar-sized fail. It will happen. Maybe it
almost has to.
Maybe when he's like 90, they'll give him $1 trillion to make a movie, and he'll die halfway through his 15-year thing. And that's like only death can stop James Cameron. That's what I'm getting at.
So speaking of tech, while we're here, so I was a little disappointed with the tech of the future in one way, and that way is lifespan. So Ripley's out there for 57 years, right? She comes back. I missed my daughter's 11th birthday. Now she's 66. Oh, and she's been dead for 2 years. Mm. So you tell me the lifespan of a human being in the future is only 66 years?
That's kind of sad. And women tend to live longer than men. Now, she could have had, like, maybe she died from the love of her mother being ripped out of her. took a couple 10, 20 years off her lifespan. But, yeah, it's another thing. The other thing I noticed is the money that they're throwing around.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Nostromos cost $47 million. Right. Hey, this base is, there's $20 million of technology. No.
No.
Dude.
There's $300 billion.
You couldn't launch one nut to build that factory into orbit for $20 million. Like, we're talking trillions of dollars for an offshore. Now, the only thing I can think to make sense is it's also weirdly, like, the Colonial Marines had United States flags on them. Like, if you're a universalist like Aaron here, I figure if we ever get off this rock and start colonizing, it will be as a global organization. You already see that in spaceflight, like, the Russians and the Chinese and the Japan, like, we're all working together on this common goal, and that'll be maybe the thing that unites us. It's weird to see kind of things still as like, oh, this is the United States and they have these corporations and they own this and that. But maybe there's a global currency and they're talking like million standard quaaludes. Units or whatever. Yeah, quaaludes, gold press latinum bars. Right. Because otherwise, none of it. Like, look, Cameron, you spent more making this fucking movie than this interstellar starship cost to build. Like, did no one, like, as you're calculating how much craft services cost, it never occurred that maybe you need to add a couple billion or even trillion.
How much
this?
Does mac and cheese cost in space?
I don't know. James Cameron has no idea. I also thought it would be like when I was looking, like, these are so clearly real sets, like the hangar of the Marines ship and like the interior of these reactor facilities, and like how cool it must have been to be stomping around with these loader suits and stuff. And like, it must have been just so much fun to show up every day and like, oh, what are we going to get to do?
Oh yeah.
And they're so spraying cool. alien blood everywhere and there's stuff hissing and steaming. Right. Like it must have been Super cool.
I could do without the goo, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of goo.
Getting shot in your face? No, you don't like that?
Not a big fan of the goo. But the other thing they do that's real cool in this movie is they kind of introduce you to these locations, because the locations are in themselves like just as important as many of the characters.
Yeah.
And you kind of get this like pan over everything before we actually use it. So you see like the loader, the exosuit thing. You see a lot of the craft and the APC and stuff. And he's kind of taking you on a tour of the later parts of the movie before you realize that's
what
he's doing.
You're right, because if they had the Ripley showing her Class 2 loader license in the first part of the movie, her defeating the alien queen would have been like, this is Deus Ex Machina.
Right.
Oh, you've got a, in case of alien queen, win suit that you got strapped somewhere?
Pretty much.
And instead, it's so, like, I remember the first time I saw it, and when she, like, the airlock opens, and she's standing there with her power rig, and I'm like, this is about to be the most fucking cool thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, you know, I mean, it's since been surpassed in, like, any given minute of Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you how freaking excited I was as a teenage boy seeing that door open and her saying, get away from her, you bitch. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But it makes me feel bad because, like, I think of Adam Savage and a lifetime of experience that he's earned building this shit, like building these sets, and like they just don't do that anymore, man.
Right.
Like practical models and as shitty as the APC looked, like, you know, the fact it was real and kind of moving through real terrain and you had these actors on these giant sound stages hissing and whirring and dripping, like that's never going to happen anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame.
I wonder if this is how, like, because I remember seeing a lot of documentaries talking about like the old Cecil B. DeMille types bemoaning like these old, like, you'd have like the literal cast of thousands, like you just have thousands of people, extras, backs around, and that kind of died and went away.
Yeah,
like every single time, like as cinema kind of steps forward technologically and in sophistication, some of that grandeur and just kind of cool, gritty craftsman detail goes away. And I don't know, where are we going towards?
It's a good question.
I'd say it's sterile, but like it's not like the last 20 movies I've been like, oh, look at these CGI garbage.
Right. I mean, it keeps getting better. And I think, you know, in some places it actually, like, CG works better than it does in practicality. Because, like, if you, there are some scenes in here where you can really just tell that these things are animated puppets, right?
Right.
Or suits on people. You can kind of see the artificiality of it, even though it's a real thing that's in the shot. And that can kind of be gotten around in CG.
Yeah.
In some ways that you just can't do in real
life. You can make things totally alien. You can make things like limbs bend at angles that you can't get a guy in a rubber suit.
Right.
I will say, though, that I still think the aliens look very convincingly real.
Oh, yeah.
Very few times when they're moving around do I think, oh, that's this dude in a rubber suit with a giant penis head on.
Right.
Like,
right.
It looks suitably alien and terrifying. Which brings me to Newt, which I thought, I was surprised at how much I really liked her and her performance. Carrie Hinn, this is the only movie she's ever been in. She's now a fourth grade school teacher. And she had a lot of fun stories. Like, it seems like that the crew like went out of their way to make this 10-year-old girl feel comfortable on the set. Like, she said that, like, I wasn't afraid of the aliens because all these stuntmen were like my friends. And, you know, they just put on this mask and like you do. And like the assistant director stayed all night on the water tank set to make sure that the water heater stayed on, so it was nice and warm for her when she was splashed around in the water. And, like, in between takes, her and the stuntman wearing an alien suit would, like, get up on this bench and, like, kick their feet around in the water. It seemed like even the, like, the little kid that's being scared most of the time was having fun. But she did, like, I've seen lots of terrible kids trying to act afraid and trying to act shell-shocked. And I think she nailed it. And, like, this is what makes this movie so great. Like, I thought that the scene where Ripley was, like, cleaning off her face and they were bonding, like, that's almost too good for this type of movie. It's that stuff that, like, elevated beyond just, like, you know, the dumbass marine stuff and the dumb alien stuff and the gross gore stuff and make it into, like, one of the greatest science fiction movies of all time.
Yeah. And I think James Cameron, as he progressed in his career, got better and better at that stuff.
Yeah.
So this is kind of just the beginning of it.
And he also, like, from the halfway point of his movie, he keeps his foot on the throttle because things go to shit. So I've forgotten, because I guess in my memory, I thought the Marines kind of established perimeter and, like, there's a bit of calm, but not really.
Yeah, they retreat to this complex where they kind of hole up almost immediately when they get there.
And they lose, like, they come in there with, like, a platoon full of Marines. They lose everyone but, like, four dudes in the first attack.
Yeah.
And that first attack is just everything is confused and everything is extremely violent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the lieutenant is getting them all killed. And then Ripley takes over the, I don't know, like you're calling it the APC and just driving it pell-mell through. Which, oddly enough, I thought it looked better when she was, like, slamming into walls and stuff. That might have actually been a real vehicle.
Maybe, yeah.
Where the one that pops out of the dropship isn't. I don't know. It's pretty great. It's pretty good.
The other thing that I think is super effective in this movie is just the atmosphere that it creates and the tension. And it does that a lot of the times with pure silence. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be scenes where we don't know if they're being stalked. They don't know if they're being stalked, but nobody is willing to make a sound, right?
Right.
And all you hear a lot of the time is just this pinging
of
the radar looking for aliens. And it really becomes this intense atmosphere when, you know, right before you start to see the aliens pop up. And then, you know, shit hits the fan. But I really like the tension that it creates with just silence.
Yeah. And I also like the fact that what's his name? Hudson, Private Hudson. Like, he's kind of the voice of the audience.
Right,
because he's saying that what we're all thinking, like, oh my god, like, you know, game over, we're in, you're in some shit now, what are we going to do? There's no, like, there's and I love when, like, Ripley's like, look, this little girl survived for longer than however long it's going to take us to get picked up, and she hasn't any training. He's like, oh, well, why don't you put her in charge then? He's just so perfect.
Yeah, he's great.
And I also like, you know, there's another Cameron hallmark that like, Ripley's trying to give, like, the conventional, like, oh, you know, your Dolly doesn't have bad dreams and all that, and Newt just deadpans. That's because she's a piece of plastic.
Yeah.
I like how they he has the scene and then immediately deconstructs it, which makes it feel more real, because, like, I've dealt with smart kids, and that's kind of how they roll.
Yep.
The other thing that's, like, effective is, like, making you imagine what things would be like the what it would be like to wake up 57 years in the future, realize all your friends are dead, what it would be like to be welded into this pipe that's barely big enough to fit your body, and then to just inch along. They showed several scenes of Bishop the android, like, you know, just hustling through this pipe, and it's like, you know, he's an android, presumably.
Yeah,
he doesn't
care.
But it's weird because he does have some kind of feelings.
Yeah,
and that's
it seems
one of,
so.
That's one of the most interesting things about the Aliens universe, honestly, the AI technology. All of the characters in the Aliens movie that are aliens seem to be one of the most memorable parts. You got Michael Fassbender, you got Lance Hendrickson, you got Bilbo Baggins, I got a brain fart, and Ian Holm.
Right.
They're all the kind of, like, interesting, very cool, you know, and Bishop's the only one that's kind of the only benevolent one. Like, he was true blue android to the end.
Right. So
why is he not a company man? Did they do too good a job programming the...
Maybe
you know, laws of robotics into them or what?
Could be. I mean, it depends on, you know, how they learn and how they adapt and change. I mean, you could conceivably develop a system where... I mean, you almost have to develop a system where this AI is going to learn its behaviors, and if you don't teach it correctly or it learns information that changes its thought patterns just like a human would, it could develop a different personality. My question about the androids, I guess, is what is their status within society? Are they like citizens of this world? Are they like data where they're considered like life forms that have to have the same rights as human beings, or are they property? And I don't think it addresses that at all, which I don't know. Maybe that's not the end of the world.
Yeah, you might. I mean, there's a little because I would just say they're property.
Okay.
But there is a little bit of hint because Bishop pushes back when they say you're synthetic.
Yeah, you're synth, and he's an artificial human.
Or artificial person something yeah. like that. So he's like, has a sensitivity to how he perceives himself. But I feel like, you know, maybe in another 100 years, they'll have their sentience recognized. But right now, they're very much in a property, because when he volunteers to go sacrifice himself, clearly no one has a problem. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, send the robot.
Right.
Get the robot in that pipe and have him go down and do all that crap.
You have intrinsically less value than a human life.
And there's also a very effective, like, and I think Cameron was smart to all the way to the end, because there's little hints that, like, you know, Bishop's got the same fascination with this alien, and maybe he's in on the thing. And then when she goes down to the queen and rescues and comes back up, and he's like abandoned.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember thinking, like, God damn, that fucking robot. And then he comes out and he ends up being, like, you know, arguably this very heroic character.
He does.
The other thing I didn't understand is in Prometheus, they show Fassbender. He is the one person that stays awake while everyone else is cryosleeping, right?
Right. Why wouldn't he?
He's riding basketball. He's riding a bicycle while shooting baskets and mastering the art of being Peter O'Toole from Lawrence of Arabia. And in this movie, Bishop is in cryosleep with them.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that with a robot? Like, it's almost like,
I don't know,
they set that up just so Ripley can have the, oh my God, there's a robot? Yeah. I'm a raging robus. Didn't you know that?
Yeah, I guess I don't find it problematic. If all of the robots here are property, mm-hmm. You know, you can debate whether or not they should be, but at least there's not like a class system in the robots where, because how would you distinguish between, you know, these robots that come in at the very beginning of the movie when they find Ripley and they're cutting the doors open and they're clearly smart. There's clearly AI at work there.
Oh, you're talking about
the one that comes in and scans. Right. The ones that look like actual robots.
Right.
Like big, heavy, clunky metal things.
Right.
How do you distinguish between those and the androids, right?
Yeah.
Where do you draw the line and say this AI is...
That would be interesting if they all have the same consciousness program. But like people,
they're just in different forms.
It's like, oh yeah, Bishop, I can see him. He's a human. But this thing that looks like, you know, Wall-E,
right?
No way, your property.
Even though it might be just as smart and just as capable of sentience.
Yeah. Uh huh. That would be
Bishop.
Although that seems like it's very cruel to program essentially like a blowtorch with a human level consciousness. It reminds me of that thing in Rick and Morty where like Rick invents this machine to butter his toast.
Uh-huh.
And it like asks him later, it's like, what is the purpose in life? And he's like, to butter my toast. And then the thing, I forget what it says, but it's like depressed about it. He's like, yeah, welcome through the club. I don't even have a purpose. At least you were created with a purpose.
Right.
I was created by nothing and I have no purpose. So fuck off.
That brings up the question, like, if you can give an android that's supposed to be created in the human form, like a third arm that's like super useful, why wouldn't you?
Right.
And would androids with two arms feel like they got ripped off?
Sure.
Like, man, I don't have a third appendage. That'd be really useful for me.
Like Mark One of androids, they ought to at least have monkey feet.
Yes, at least.
If you don't make an android that's fully double jointed at the elbow and knee and has monkey feet, then I don't know what the hell you're doing.
Right.
Because we are an inferior design because we weren't designed. We're just this,
I think, like a tail is super useful.
Yeah.
Right?
Prehensile.
That's
there
something
you,
you see in the aliens.
Mark One android should have monkey feet, double jointed elbows. All joints should be double jointed.
Oh, yeah.
And prehensile tail.
Yeah. That's how I would design them for sure.
Why stop with one prehensile tail? Maybe they need two.
Yeah,
maybe they should just be bristling with prehensile tails, like and gripping things.
Yeah, but this is kind of my point, right? Like, okay, you can take it in one direction and say, oh, well, the blowtorch bot got real screwed on that.
Right.
But would you say, oh, well, the android who was made in human form completely got real screwed on that?
Right.
Because he could have had three prehensile tails and nine arms.
Sure.
And 360 degree eyes.
These
like
these people suffer from a failure of imagination.
Right.
I do like the like semi-organic nature of them. Like when these robots get ripped apart and they're full of like milk and
like hoses.
I wonder how much that influenced, because I know we talked a little bit on this Westworld, but I wonder how much of the Westworld design was influenced by this, or to the extent that I hear that the Westworld design was based on real life, like protein 3D printing technology. Like, did they just get lucky? Like, the fact it's kind of like in the Star Trek way, like when Picard had to flip communicator. Mm-hmm. And there was that one time in the late 90s and early 2000s right. where that was like, oh my God, Star Trek got it right. Yeah. Isolinear chips, and we've got these freaking USB drives, and then we moved on. Like, I wonder if they just got lucky and they envisioned something that actually seems like that would be a plausible way to construct a semi-organic being.
Yeah, could be.
Because I love the tubes and shit, and like he's got like analogs of like lungs and liver functions. Can he eat?
Mm-hmm. I would say yes. I'm gonna just go with yes.
I mean, he's got to
definitely he can eat.
I mean, you gotta have some way to get power. You either eat it or you get plugged in.
Yeah. Or I suppose he could drink it. Like,
I guess
there's no reason for a robot to chew, right?
No, he could drink some kind of electrolyte slurry that just powers him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else do we want to talk about?
He can pick which esophagus he wants to use because he's got four of them.
Do we? I guess we should go back, circle back around to Josh's original questions and go over those one by one. Yeah.
Let me talk real quick about.
I've been kind of holding court. Go.
Yeah. So I think this is one of the scariest. Like, I think these aliens are way scarier than like a Predator, because almost purely because of their acid blood. Like,
oh yeah,
the pure act of fighting these things is hazardous to your health in not just the sense that like, oh, it can come and it can rip me to pieces, but even if I manage to kill it, it becomes even more dangerous, right? Like, if I'm close quarters on this thing and I shoot it, it's going to spray acid blood all over me.
Uh-huh.
If it's above me and I shoot through the grate or I melt it or something, the acid blood is going to drip right on my head.
Right.
Like, they're an intensely terrifying being. They're completely alien in form. They have these tails that they can use with stickers on them, apparently. Or at least the queen does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
No, they all do have the bladed tail. Because there have been lots of people impaled in aliens. Did you know the mythology on that is that the, I don't know, maybe Prometheus is changed that a little bit, but there for a while it was canon that the Predators had engineered the aliens to be the ultimate like prey. It's like they designed the lion just to hunt, and it had all those features like if you anything that you do to harm it can also harm yourself, and you know, that seemed like
intensely terrifying,
like a super cool idea.
And then they're, like we talked about, extremely smart, so like, you combine all those, it's a frightening enemy.
Like, the Predator, this reminds me of something me and Jack were just talking about the other day in Destiny. We were running around blowing heads off aliens, and he's talking about what's the scariest of the aliens, and we agreed the Hive were, because, like, the Fallen and Cabal have a consciousness and a society that you can recognize. They have hierarchy, and they have language, and they have presumably children and mates, and they have affection for their own. Like there are things like this being has a consciousness that I recognize. Like, I'm on the wrong side of a gun from it, but like, absent our military conflict, whereas the Hive are just these shrieking death insect things.
Right.
And I feel like that's the other thing. Like, the Predator, you can tell he has a culture, that he comes from a society and they honor certain things and respect certain things, where these aliens don't give a fuck. You are just biomass to them.
Yeah.
And they'll take women, children. There's no, like, you know, Predator has a code of honor. He doesn't go after weaker members. He doesn't go after children, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, alien will chest burst out a child all day long.
Yeah.
Like, give him a room full of babies. It's like, soft, sweet meat. No problem.
Yep. And what did you think about the final scene, or I guess not the final scene, but the second to last scene where she flushes it out the airlock? Did you like the callback to the first one? Did you think maybe they should have gone with something else? How'd you feel about that?
I felt like if I was James Cameron, I want to, if possible, honor the first movie, but exceed it. And I think because in the first movie, she essentially slithers into a spacesuit and secures herself and then blows the airlock.
Mm-hmm.
This, she engages in a lengthy mechanized combat with a much larger alien queen, and I thought that... So, yeah, I mean, what else are you supposed to do with it? As you say, if you blow it apart, it's just going to, like, eat a hole through the ship or some shit like that, so...
Yeah, I thought it was really good as a callback, too.
Now, it is amazing how often airlocks and blowing aliens out become part... Like, that's almost like
it seems like the only way to kill them, yeah.
It's like forming Voltron. You know what's going to happen. Eventually, oh, there's the airlock. I wonder when something's going to get...
Yeah, but in the second one, you can definitely see, like, oh, this fight is so badass. Look, she's beating this thing with the exosuit. And then, like, if you were a fan of the first Alien movie, you see that airlock open up, and you're like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Right. I know what's happening here.
Right. She's going to take out the trash.
Right. Maybe the fourth time they do that, it doesn't work quite as well, but...
I mean, they keep finding ways to change it up. At like an Alien Resurrection, yeah. It's the newborn alien, and you know, it gets like sucked out in a very gruesome way. Like it's kind of like when like a kid gets sucked up against the pool drain and it pulls their intestines out. Like it's right. just really, really brutal and gross.
I think I remember that scene, but I can't remember if I don't know if I'm remembering that scene or the scene from The Expanse. I'm actually not sure. Right.
So, what else? Do we have anything else you want to talk about before we get back to Josh's stuff?
No, I'm good.
Okay. So, I'm trying to get back to her. Okay, so how do you guys think the alien stacks up to Alien? I think, in my opinion, Alien is a better horror film because it's a pure horror film. And Aliens is a much more exciting action. Like, Alien is not something I want to watch a bunch of times, whereas Aliens I've had a good time watching, and it's much more quotable, and it's much more badass and exciting and adventuresome, whereas Alien makes you just your skin crawl, and it's creepy and gross that way.
Yeah, I actually couldn't tell you the last time I saw Alien. It's been a long time. It's actually been a fair amount of time since the last time I saw Aliens. But Alien, I hardly remember at all.
It's also really cool like to compare scenes. Like Ridley Scott, who's also known for his obsessive attention to detail. Like, there's a story about like there's this one particular scene where, in between every take, he would go in with a fresh can of black gloss spray paint and spray everything down to make sure it looked wet and tacky and slick the way he wanted it to. And it was giving the crew like headaches and physical problems from like breathing all those fumes you're not supposed to be breathing. And like it's like there are two filmmakers that are really, really good in very, very different ways.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's like, you know, which is better, vanilla or chocolate? Mm-hmm. Like, they're both great, but they're not. It's really like comparing apples and oranges, because it'd be like saying which is better, The Conjuring or Predator.
Yeah.
They're both scary in parts, but like they're completely. They don't have. They don't really have the same DNA.
Yeah, and it feels to me like maybe Ridley Scott is more singularly focused on the visuals and the kind of the world, whereas James Cameron wants to tell like a really good story, and he wants to have a lot of action and heart in his movies. And I don't get that same feeling from Ridley Scott. I get more of a clinical sort of feeling from Scott.
There's also more of
not
a sense
in a
of
bad way necessarily. Right. Just it's different.
There's also like a sense of wonder, like when you first go into the alien starship and you see like what became known as the what are they called? The engineers, the space engineers
in Prometheus.
Yeah, Prometheus, and you can see one of them like mummified in the pilot ship, and like you're like, what? And they're huge and giant. Like, what the fuck is?
Right.
And they don't even say it. It's just like, here is this completely alien thing, and kind of like, you know, be a wonder and now be terrified by it, where James Cameron is just like, nah, I'm going to land on a space factory that's been taken over by these bugs and do that.
Right. It's like trying to compare Stanley Kubrick and Mike Judge or something, right? It's not possible.
He also thinks that, where do you think the Alien franchise went off the rails with Alien 3 or Alien Resurrection?
I don't remember Alien 3. I'm not even sure I've ever seen
Alien
3.
Is a David Fincher directed prison planet where it takes place immediately after. Like, they find the ship that her and Newton Hicks are on, and for some reason the cryo chambers failed for Newton Hicks. And what I don't know. I actually don't think that any of these movies were complete on their face failures. I think the first failure movies were the Alien versus Predators. Like, there's very little to recommend any of that, those movies. Like, they're just really silly, and they do a lot of violence through the mythos that the universe had carefully constructed. And I think that Prometheus was kind of a reset button on all that and getting back to its roots of, like, kind of wonderment but still horror. Like here's mankind in this infinite cosmos, and we don't know our asses from our hole in the ground, and what all terrible things can we unleash, like... you know, it's almost like Cthulhu all over again. Like Cthulhu is all about, you know, you're exploring these unknown oceans and what you might find, and now we're in space and the Cthulhu's really out there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, do you have any strong feelings about that? Do you hate Prometheus?
No, I don't hate Prometheus. It just, I guess it wasn't quite what I was expecting. And I guess I was expecting Alien and Aliens.
And but those are two different movies. Like, were you expecting a full synthesis of it? Like,
kinda, yeah.
As scary as Aliens, but as action-packed as Aliens?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, and I guess I didn't get that. I mean, there's definitely, like, a lot of cool stuff in Prometheus. I'm not against Prometheus, but yeah, I don't know. But Alien 3, I can't even tell you if I've seen it or not. Alien Resurrection is goofy in a kind of weird way. It's definitely more of just like an action alien film. It's not really very much horror. But Ron Perlman's in it, so
yeah. I feel like every Alien added something to the mythos. Like Alien started it. James Cameron gave us the concept of them being like an insect queen colony, and they, you know, really fleshed out that idea. Alien 3 introduced the idea that you could have, I believe that's the one where the dog got alienized and it had a more canine type of alien. And then Alien 4 took that further with the human alien hybrids and, like, you know, the genetic experiment angle of it. And so I just feel like, you know, it's like, I mean, obviously they're not as good as the first two. But I'm always shocked when, like, Aliens fans say, like, they hate 3 and 4. Because it's like, I don't know. It's kind of like, do you hate Return of the Jedi? It's not as good as Empire. And yeah, it's got Ewoks, but, you know, it's got Jabba the Hutt, and it's got, you know, the one of the most emotional lightsaber scenes in the entire trilogy, and it's got a lot of good stuff, man.
Yeah.
So, moving on. Do you think the Aliens franchise suffered from not having H.R. Geiger more involved as he was in Alien?
I mean, he laid the groundwork, and they just kept following that path. I don't know why it would be such a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, he was kind of annoyed that they didn't involve him.
But he was like the art. He's kind of like Ralph McQuarrie in Star Wars.
Right.
To the extent, like he's irreplaceable, and Star Wars would look nothing like it if it wasn't for his involvement. And the prequels, to their detriment, essentially took all of Ralph McQuarrie's work and threw it away and started over with this other clean, weird aesthetic. It didn't feel like Star Wars. I feel like if Cameron had done that, but the aliens look like Geiger aliens for the most part. He streamlined them a little bit. When you get into the alien taking over the ship, it's very reminiscent of the, you know, the necroscapes that Geiger had drawn and painted for years and years. So, like, I mean, I don't know if Geiger wanted to create new type of aliens or what, but I guess I don't feel that missing element.
And no, I still see him all over this movie. You know, it's not like his influence is missing. He just wasn't a part of the actual production. Although I guess he did admire the work that they did with the Queen. He was like, that was pretty inspired.
Yeah. And, like, you know, the egg, it's disgusting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's really gross. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, you know, Geiger is not like a unique genius. Like, most people that design really scary alien stuff just take stuff that's existing in nature and put a little twist on it. And, like, hey, you know, some aspects of biology are really gross. And, like, look at this termite queen and look how her fucking egg thing pulsates. It's gross. And we'll just go crazy with that. He continues. I know Aaron is a fan of fleshed out universes. I call myself a lore whore. Where you can really dive into the backstory. Do you feel Aliens is satisfying that way, or does it not really take the mythology forward enough? I guess all of the Aliens movies except for Prometheus don't really take the mythos far enough for me. Like, yes, James Cameron added the alien queen, and that was cool. But, like, it's weird, and Aliens versus Predator did more to advance the mythology and, like, kind of taking, you know, like in Predator 2, there was a scene where a xenomorph skull was mounted in the alien in the Predator's trophy room. And that kind of, like, oh, wow, these universes are connected. And there's a shit tons of, like, comic books and stuff that kind of weave that mythology together. But those movies, as bad as I think they are, did a lot more to kind of make that mythology tie it together. And I don't know. It seems like Prometheus is maybe trying to walk a little bit of that back and get back more to the precursors of these space engineers kind of story. But no, there's like, you know, you can go back and like, if there's Wikipedias of aliens where you can just like fall down. I mean, that's what I like to do. I like on a, like when I'm sick or like there's a rainy Saturday afternoon to like get on Warhammer 40K and just start fucking reading. Like, oh, what's
talk about lore?
What's this Emperor's Golden Throne? Holy right. shit. You know, like you just keep in like, yo, what are these things? What are these things? What are the black ships of whatever? And you just like and like read up all the house history and the Alien Predator universe is very similar to that.
If you had to pick a universe that has the best lore that you're familiar with, what would your personal favorite be?
Boy, it's really up in air versus like A Song of Ice and Fire or Destiny.
Huh. Okay.
Because the thing is, like, Destiny's like, yeah. is you know 1% that's presented into the game and 99% that's entirely in these stupid grimoire cards.
Right.
And like that's where like the real personality of the game and the universe is. But that's the thing. That's maybe why I love Destiny more than most, because like that to me, like, oh yeah, I'm going around finding these dead ghosts and getting little pieces of information that made me feel like a scholarly warlock going about trying to uncover the secrets of the Golden Age. And it rewarded the kind of things that I like to do anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And it's on my cell phone, so I don't have to be sitting in front of it. Because that's the thing. Like, Skyrim's got so much lore.
Tons of it, yeah.
But I just, because it's annoying. Like, I have to either sit there and read it in the game or haul it with me back to my house and read it in the game. Like, uh-huh. I wish Skyrim had a cell phone add-on where I could just go through and read the tomes that I've gone through.
Right. They should make it where, if you collect it in the game, it now appears on your phone.
Yes.
So you can only read the stuff that you found, yes. But you can read it in a more digestible format.
And I
format.
Think Destiny's mistake was not having that accessible except through a third-party app. So, like, I think you should do both for sure. Uh-huh. Or, you know, ideally you'd render all that in the cutscenes and stuff. But, like, you know, I don't know how you'd do that.
Need James Cameron for that. Yeah. Saying, give me another 100 million.
Right. And that's the thing. Like Warhammer's also really fun to read.
Oh, Jesus.
But it's just so... I mean, it's just so over the top that mm-hmm. like you just kind of roll your eyes after a little bit of it. Let's see. Lastly, how do you think Alien stacks up to the other great James Cameron movies such as Terminator, Terminator 2, The Abyss, etc.?
Man, that's tough.
I mean, Terminator 2 is the better action flick, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. Not by much, though. I mean, this movie has got some really good action.
It's surprising how they made Sigourney Weaver into an action hero.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the first one, she's just an every woman that survives by her wits and guile and a little bit of luck. This, she's a badass. Yeah. She's shooting guns. She's shooting flamethrowers. She's going in alone and through the lair of the queen. She's fighting with the fucking power loader. Like it's really awesome. And I don't think she is it's kind of similar to like, what if, who's the guy from Predators?
Adrian Brody.
It's like if Predators had made Adrian Brody, like if you got uh-huh. him like, wow, I didn't think he could pick up the mantle of Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he kind of did it. Uh-huh. Like that's what like James Cameron successfully did that with Sigourney Weaver.
I guess when you're picking up your own mantle, it's a little bit easier. And the mantle right. doesn't weigh 500 pounds of solid muscle like right. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right. But I would never thought that she would be like going into Aliens, that she would be a convincing action heroine. And she sure as shit is.
Definitely.
But it's not as good as Terminator 2 as far as an action movie.
Yeah, it's more up my alley than like Titanic is.
It's slightly scarier than the original Terminator. Okay. Which has its moments of mm-hmm. horror and terror and suspense.
I think it's scarier than The Abyss. I really like The Abyss a lot.
I don't
think
The Abyss is that. I mean, maybe the first time through it's scary, but like...
Yeah, this
I love
is way
Abyss.
Scarier.
I think The Abyss is awesome.
Yeah.
The Abyss is a very underrated James Cameron film.
For sure. I think it's the one he made after this, right?
Yes.
It's like this, then The Abyss, and then Terminator...
Two, because like well, the Abyss technology, he kind of like, oh, this would be a really cool term. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, it's so weird that he's fallen down this Avatar hole, because I've seen Avatar is like a thrill ride, you know, like you go see it in 3D and IMAX screen. It's like, oh, my God. And like, it's amazing. And then you watch it in isolation. It's kind of not that great.
Hmm.
Like, I don't think Avatar is a great film. It's more of a roller coaster ride.
Actually, haven't seen it.
Really? Still?
Never saw it. So I missed it when it was in theaters.
Well, you're fucked now because...
I know. And after that, it's like, well, it's this giant spectacle of a movie. Why am I going to watch it on a tiny little screen?
Right.
So, you know, in 30 years or whatever, when it comes back to the screen, maybe I'll watch it.
Well, I imagine when we get, you know, Avatars 1 through... or 2 through 10 or whatever, hopefully they'll have a theatrical re-release to kind of prime the pump for that.
That'd be nice, yeah.
Because very few people can afford to set up in their home theater system. Sorry, I'm having an elaborate series of heart attacks here, apparently. Very few people can afford the system that you to see it in as it's intended, you know?
Yeah.
So, final question. Do you think Alien Covenant will be a return to good Alien movies? And by good Alien movies, he means the first two, or another so-so failure, and should they just stop now or keep trying to expand the Alien universe? Whether they should stop is irrelevant, because as long as it keeps making hundreds of millions of dollars, they will continue to expand the Alien universe.
Yeah.
I don't think... I mean, it's so weird because, like, I don't think... this is maybe another non-conventional take. I don't think that crappy follow-up movies diminish the goodness of the like Godfather 3 being kind of disappointing, right, did not make me like Godfather 1 or 2 less.
Yeah, same here.
And if I heard that Coppola found some ancient buried manuscript from Mario Puzo or whatever his name is and like decided he's going to go back to the helm and not the Godfather 4, mm-hmm, I'd be like, fuck yeah, right on. Regardless of whether it was good or not, I'd still be excited for it. So like...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, this is a universe and it can have installed... Like Star Wars movies can be good or bad, mm-hmm, but I'm still excited to see the next one.
Yeah, and if the next one is trash, it doesn't affect the originals for me.
Right.
At all. I still love them.
Having said that, I mean, Ridley Scott has certainly said that he is trying to return to the more horror-based part of the first one, which I don't know, because I'm still not a horror movie fan. I really like the thinkers and like the things that the questions and philosophies raised in something like Prometheus.
Yeah.
I prefer that than just straight up like a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see if you can make Danny McBride be anything other than Danny McBride.
Right.
That's for sure.
Maybe this will be his turn.
I'm interested in seeing if... Because I've been trying to stay as spoiler-free as possible on this. I've only seen the trailers that I cannot avoid seeing in the theater.
Yeah, same here.
But I'm also interested in seeing if Michael Fassbender is literally the same alien.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the head that got reattached to the body after him and What's-Her-Face jaunted around the galaxy trying to find the space engineers, or if he's just another model.
Yeah.
Because that would, like, you know, I'm curious about how they handle that, too. You know, you got the same-looking guy, but he could be literally the same thing, or he could be just an updated model. But, yeah, no, I don't think, like, the only time I'd say stop is if, like, it fell into the hands of a production. Like Sony and Fox kind of got that way with Spider-Man. Like, just stop.
Yeah.
You clearly don't know what you're doing, and I don't have any hope or excitement for a new one. Now Spider-Man's back in Marvel's hands, I'm excited again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, last X-Men movie was kind of a turd, but then Logan was cool. Like, that's where you can get in a problem where, like, you've got bad ownership, and they're just trying to, like, you know, turn this into a cash cow.
Yeah, and I guess even then, you know, I mean, yeah, you can want them to stop, but at the same time not have it diminish, you know, the quality and enjoyment of the originals.
Right.
So,
yeah.
They can make them.
You hear an announcement, a project, and you're like, okay, does that sound cool? Do the trailers look good? Who's attached to the project? Are the writers and directors good? And then you can get, because like the thing is, like, I was kind of checked out on X-Men until I saw the trailer for Logan. And I'm like, holy shit, this could be a good X. And I was immediately reinvested in it, and I'm glad I was.
And even in the stuff that I'm like a fan of, like Star Wars, I don't get all worked up. I used to do this. I used to do this, and maybe the prequels cured me of this.
Right?
But I used to get into a fervor over the things that I loved, and it's like, well, I can do that, or I can wait, because they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Whether I get all up in arms and say, they shouldn't make this, this is the stupidest thing ever, they're going to ruin
the
originals.
Wait. Jim Jones is not excited for his project. Right. Everybody wrap it up, stop.
Shut
her down.
No, that's not going to happen. So I'm just going to wait until I see what they make, and if they make something awesome, great, I love it. But like getting all worked up about it in the meantime does nobody any good.
I feel like that's something that everyone needs to learn, that hype is a poison.
Yeah, I learned it when I was 17, man.
And same here. Like Star
the
Wars
hardest
is what,
way possible.
Like killed it hard. And
yeah.
like I felt like I broke up with someone that I'd had a 30-year relationship with, and they've right. they've kind of like now we've reunited the love, and it's as good as it ever was. But
yeah,
and it's funny because I see this with, like, you know, kids playing games, like mm-hmm. they build stuff up, and then, you know, they pre-order shit, and then it's like, oh my god, this sucks, and I was fooled. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, you got George Lucas, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Every generation has to learn the painful lesson that, like, getting. Like expectations are killers, bad and good. Mm-hmm. Try to go in with an open mind and everything and see what happens.
Yep.
So that's it. Josh, thanks again for commissioning this podcast. It was super enjoyable. Gave me a good excuse to go back and watch Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never seen the special edition / director's cut. So that was also a treat. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
So thanks for commissioning that. Really appreciate it, and had a good time doing it. We will have another commissioned podcast out real soon. Next up on our slate is The Wicker Man.
Oh, boy. That should be a fun one.
Unbelievable. And then we're tackling Jackie Brown, which is a community commission. You should check your email boxes because I sent out an email trying to get feedback. So if you haven't seen that yet, check your inbox for your chance to submit feedback for that, and we'll be getting those in the weeks ahead. Thanks again, Josh. We'll see you on the next commission. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye-bye.